Today, the market's twisted hands. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of those posts covering finance and problem news with a distinctively Australian flavour. In this week's market review, as normal, we'll start in the US, come across to Europe, then Asia, and end in Australia, because in another wild week where Fed speak on one hand and hopium on the other has driven the markets all over the show, the Dow Jones ended higher on Friday as investors weighed up further hawkish remarks from the Federal Reserve officials and also the wave of quarterly results from retailers. Looking to the shortened trading week ahead, the Fed's minutes from its October meeting will garner investor attention for clues on the central bank's thinking on monetary policy. But it's pretty clear Chief Hawk, St. Louis Fed President Bullard, said this week that thus far the change in the monetary policy stance appears to have had any limited effects on observed inflation, he said in analysis by the St. Louis Fed, that debated the appropriate rate regime for the central bank after six increases since March. Inflation, as measured by the CPI, expanded by 7.7% during the year to October, growing at its slowest pace in 9 months. And prior to that, the CPI grew at 9.1% during the 12 months to June. That's the fastest in four decades. The drop in the CPI came after the Fed has added 375 basis points between March and November to rates, which were previously at just 25 basis points. Despite the central bank's aggressive bid to get prices down, the CPI remains at more than three times the target of the Fed, which has vowed to bring inflation back to its 2% target. And Bullard noted that the central bank's policymaking Federal Open Market Committee, or FOMC, is seeking a future rate regime that would be sufficiently restrictive. While the policy rate has increased substantially this year, it has not yet reached a level that could be justified as sufficiently restrictive, according to this analysis, even with the generous assumptions, Bullard said. To attain a sufficiently restrictive level, the policy rate will need to be increased further. On the question of disinflation, he said market pricing suggests that this was likely to occur sometime in 2023. Now, while Bullard did not specifically say what the future rate should be, he spooked the market by making a case that the restrictive zone for the policy rate was 5 to 7%, using a derivative of the Taylor rule. Still, he shied away from advocating that and said, look, somewhere between 5 and 5.25% was needed at a minimum. And Bullard has been a leading hawkish voice at the Fed, although he will lose his vote next year as the regional presidents take annual turns voting on the FOMC. Bullard's colleagues have generally caught up, though. The market has wavered recently between a terminal rate of 4.75% and 5%, with an occasional flirtation at 5.25%. The implied yield on the Fed futures for the middle of next year has edged up now to more than 5%, having finished last week at 4.88%. And Boston Federal Reserve President Susan Collins said all possible increments of rate hikes were on the table at the Fed's December meeting, including a 75 basis point rate hike. The comments echoed similar remarks from other Fed members who this week have insisted that further monetary policy tightening is needed to quell inflation. The markets, though, continue to have their fingers in their ears, seemingly ignoring the Fed's signals. And just remember that a stronger market is not what the Fed needs to see in their battle with inflation. Treasury yields have continued to strengthen against the backdrop of hawkish remarks from Fed members, pressurizing growth sectors of the market like tech and consumer discretionary. With the recession signal on the 2-10 stronger than ever, the 10-year was at 3.829, while the 2-year was at 4.5308. Dow Jones Industrial Average gained 0.59%, the Nasdaq rose 0.01%, and the S&P 500 rose 0.48%. Big tech traded mixed, with Alphabet and Microsoft ending the day in the red, while Apple and Meta closed less than 1% higher. Amazon, meanwhile, fell nearly 1% as the e-commerce giant confirmed job cuts would continue into next year amid a, quote, challenging economy. Chip stocks ended just above the flat line as Applied Materials gave up some gains to start reporting third quarter results that topped analyst estimates. And the flurry of earnings from retailers, meanwhile, continues to show mixed performance, with Foot Locker raising its full-year guidance after reporting better than expected third-quarter results and selling its shares more than 8% higher. The apparel and footwear retailer also expects less of a challenging environment in the fourth quarter than previously expected, with comps planned down somewhere like 6 to 8%, versus messaging from the management previously that comps would be down double digits. Wedbush said, after lifting its price target on the stock to $37 from $30. Gap swung to an unexpected profit in the third quarter, driven by stronger sales momentum as a result of a sequential improvement in comps across brands, Goldman Sachs in the note. And Williams Sonoma, meanwhile, reported quarterly results that topped estimates on the top line but pulled its guidance through fiscal 2024, citing macroeconomic uncertainty. Its shares fell 6%. In other news, Carvana slumped 3% as the used car retailer is set to cut 1,500 jobs, or 8% of its workforce, according to CNBC. Energy capped gains on the broader market as oil prices fell amid ongoing fears about weaker demand in China amid ongoing COVID-19 restrictions. The fall in oil prices is due to concerns about demand amid the rising cases in China, which made it unlikely that coronavirus restrictions will be relaxed anytime soon, Commerzbank said in a note. Crude prices entered into contango mode, a market structure that defines weakness for the first time since 2021, and finished with a weekly loss as much as 10% as China's COVID headlines, new hawkish signals from the Federal Reserve, and easing supply worries all came to a head for oil bulls. The front month December contract for the US crude benchmark West Texas Intermediate, or WTI, settled at $80.21 a barrel, down 1.87% on the day. December WTI remained well below the $80 support level for much of the day, hitting a six-week low of $87.62 before paring losses just before the close. The front-month contract also traded at a discount to the January 23 contract at one point. While so-called contango difference between the contracts is meager, it represented a structural oil market weakness where buyers wished to hold a position in WTI at the time of a contract expiry would pay more to switch to a new front-month contract. WTI aside, the front-month January contract in Brent, the global oil benchmark, was at $87.88 a barrel, down 2.14%. Like WTI, January Brent was also at a contango to February Brent earlier. On a weekly basis, WTI finished down 10%, adding to last week's deficit of nearly 4%, and Brent was off 8.7% for the current week after last week's slide of 2.6%. Oil prices are continuing to retreat against the backdrop of increasingly gloomy economic prospects and surging COVID cases in China, which risk further restrictions and lockdowns, threatening demand in the world's second largest economy, said Craig Odom and Mr. Onya. With Brent having broken below the psychologically important $90 mark and WTI under $80, Erlem wondered how much this would test the patience of OPEC Plus, the global oil-producing alliance that decided from this month to cut 2 million barrels per day from the collective output of the 23 countries in its coalition. Erlem noted that the OPEC Plus was severely criticized for the production cut by the Biden administration and the Paris-based International Energy Agency, which represents oil-consuming countries, and yet the alliance's efforts came to nothing in terms of price support. China is battling coronavirus outbreaks in numerous major cities, including Shanxing and the capital Beijing, while it takes steps to try to ease the burden of its strict zero-COVID policy, which has caused severe economic damage and widespread frustration nearly 3 years into the pandemic. Several Chinese refiners have asked Saudi Aramco to reduce December-loaded crude oil volumes as COVID-19 restrictions and a faltering economy have weakened fuel demand in the world's biggest oil importer. The refiners had reportedly sought to trim supplies for December by about half of the previous month's level. Some of the geopolitical risk that sent oil higher this year, specifically the Ukraine conflict, has also eased of late. For instance, Poland and NATO concluded on Wednesday that a missile that crashed inside Poland was probably a stray fire by Ukraine's air defences and not a Russian strike, easing fears that the conflict between Russia and Ukraine was spilling across the border. A flotilla of ships is carrying distillate fuel to New York Harbour to shore up stocks ahead of the winter, further easing supply worries, according to Reuters. At least 7 vessels that can carry about 3.6 million barrels of distillate, which includes low sulfur diesel and home heating oil, will arrive in New York Harbor in late November and early December, the report said. That will be equivalent to about 4% of all the US East Coast distillate fuel imports in 2021. With all the negativity in the market, could OPEC Plus go even further with production cuts if the outlook continues to deteriorate when it meets again in a couple of weeks? Earlham asked in his oil market commentary on Friday. OPEC Plus meets on December the 4th to review its production policy just before the start of the December 5th price cap on Russian oil, which is widely expected to be a market-boosting event for crude, given that the EU G7 engineered initiative will theoretically lead to reprisals from Moscow. Some analysts, though, think Saudi Arabia, which leads OPEC Plus as the Arab world's largest oil producer and as the only nation with the perceived ability to hike and cut crude exports at will, might not be able to go too far from November's 2 million barrels per day. Not so sure KSA has much of a hand to play, Art Berman, an energy analyst widely followed on Twitter, said, referring to the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, which he added would probably be more effective at flooding the market than starving it in the past. The Kingdom is also super aware of maintaining its role as an honest and reliable supplier, unlike Russia, Berman added. Another tweet labelled Aramco Theatre, Berman played down state-owned Saudi oil company Aramco's caution that world oil capacity remained at extremely low levels, the company's reminder to the oil trade that crude prices should be correspondingly higher. The world should be worried. Saudi Aramco has issued a dire warning over extremely low capacity, Berman wrote. It has been extremely low for the last decade, except for the 2 years of COVID. Talkers are growing that the G7 EU-engineered Russian oil price cap, which market bulls expect to lead to an even bigger crunch in global supply, will only result in a fleeting price rally. That's because Russian barrels will likely get rerouted and not taken off the market, said John Kidloff, founding partner at New York energy hedge fund Again Capital. That's exactly the wish of the US and its allies, that the Russians earn considerably less for the same volume of oil floating around the market. Now, turning to gold, the naysayers to the gold rally might be right once again. Fed superhawk James Bullard's comments that higher for longer interest rates will be the only way for the Federal Reserve to effectively bring inflation back to its 2% target knocked gold off its nearly $1,800 an ounce perch, sending the metal with other risk assets like oil and stocks lower for the week as the dollar rebounded from last week's lows. Bullion settled down less than 1% on the week and just about half a percentage lower on Friday, keeping in its $1,750 an ounce range. It was actually at $1,753.30. But the market steam from the last week that gave gold futures their best week in 30 months seemed to be evaporating, said traders. For the week, it fell $15. Last week, Comets Gold rose $92.80, or 5.5%. That's the most in a week in 2.5 years, since a 6.5% jump during the week of April the 3rd, 2020. The spot price of bullion, which is more closely followed than futures by some traders, was at $1,749 an ounce. The dollar index, which pits the greenback against the euro, yen, pound, Canadian dollar, Swedish krona, and Swiss franc, was up 0.7% on the week, tumbled, of course, 4% last week on expectations that the Fed might opt for smaller size rate hikes going forth, a notion Bullard virtually killed off. I'm not really that bullish on gold anymore, said Philip Strebel, chief market strategist at Blue Line Futures in Chicago. Like most, I was expecting a clear break above $1,800, but that didn't come, and it probably won't after what Bullard said. US inflation remains unacceptably high for the Fed to ditch jumbo-sized rate hikes in favor of only smaller increases, Bullard, who is president of the Federal Reserve Bank, said on Thursday. Analysts said Bullard, who has garnered the reputation of a Fed superhawk, has clearly knocked the wind out of gold's sails. It seems bullion traders are listening to the latest Fed speak more so than stock traders, said Ed Moyer, analyst at online trading platform Onya. The economic data is telling that there's a US mixed picture now, but large parts of the labour market and factory activity resilience suggest inflation could be stickier next quarter, which supports the hawks at the Fed. And Moyer also said the path of least resistance for gold was lower and that could continue if the FOMC meeting minutes from November, due imminently, supported the idea that December's rate could still be hawkish. Comet's gold got to as high as $1,791 on Tuesday. That's the highest since August the 12th, and it's given back about $37 or 2% from the peak. The Fed will want to keep all the tightening options available, and they will likely say that a 0.5% increase doesn't mean they're at the end of their tightening cycle, Moyer added. Now, over in Europe, European stock markets edged higher on Friday, helped by improved US consumer confidence in the wake of the country's autumn statement, but gains are likely to be tentative as the regional economic outlook remains bleak. The DAX index in Germany traded 1.16% higher, the CAC 40 in France rose 1.04%, and the FTSE 100 in the UK climbed 0.53%. There was some good news for investors to cling to on Friday, with the GFK Consumer Confidence Index for the UK climbing to minus 44 in November, the market research firm said early on Friday. This represented a rise from minus 47 in October, and was considerably better than the expected minus 52, even as it stays close to record low levels. Additionally, UK retail sales rose 0.6% on the month in October. That's a better result than expected, although this still represents a fall of 6.1% on the year, with British consumers struggling to cope with soaring inflation and rising interest rates. The squeeze on household finance is evident, and the sales of food and household goods fell, while new lines helped lift clothing sales. Next week's highlight will be the preliminary November PMI. The composite has been below 50 boom bust level for 3 months and most likely will remain there as the anticipated UK recession bites. This came just a few hours after UK Chancellor Jeremy Hunt confirmed in his autumn statement that the country was in recession while announcing $55 billion worth of tax rises and spending cuts as Britons face a record hit to the living standards. See my separate report that I published yesterday on this. One extra observation is that the windfall tax on oil and gas companies will be increased to 35% from 25%, and a new 45% tax will be levied on electricity generators. Welfare and state pensions will rise with inflation, and the minimum wage, the national living wage, will be hiked by 9.7%. That's a record amount. The government plans to cap the unit price of gas and electricity, and that will lift the average household bills to around £3,000 per annum rather than £2,500. Separately, the surcharge on bank profits will be cut to 3% from 8%, which will minimise the impact of the corporate tax hike to 25% from 19% in April. It applies to profits in excess of £100 million, which excludes small banks. Also, in one of the few trust curtailing measures retained, the cap on bankers' bonuses at twice the base pay imposed by the EU in 2014 will be scrapped. The European Central Bank must raise interest rates to a level that constrains the economy to ensure record inflation doesn't persist, according to Governing Council member Klaus Knot. Our response needs to be resolute, implying that monetary policy needs to enter restrictive territory to dampen demand, he said. We need to address high inflation persistence and growing risks that it's becoming entrenched in people's minds, which would make inflation more costly to tame. After 200 basis points of hikes in short succession, the ECB's next steps are surrounded by uncertainty and will be determined by meeting after meeting, he said. As the fight against inflation continues, the pace of increases will probably slow, according to the Dutch Central Bank chief. The ECB is a month away from deciding on its next rate increase, with inflation running at 10.6% and showing little signs of peaking. Initial discussions among the 25-member governing council suggest officials may prefer a half-point move instead of a third straight 75 basis point hike. An increasing number, however, advocate rising borrowing costs beyond the so-called neutral level that neither stimulates nor restricts the economy and is thought to be around 2%. This will be broadly reached at the December meeting, said Knot. Knot called for an early but partial stop to reinvestment to test the waters before calibrating the ultimate pace of the roll-off. The process would also be predictable, like watching paint dry. Addressing the same event earlier on Friday, the ECB President Christine Lagarde concurred, saying the balance sheet should be reduced in a measured and predictable way. despite hawkish comments from the ECB president warning that rates may have to rise to restrict growth and emphasising the outlook for inflation, the euro traded quietly at little change levels. It was consolidating within around the range of 1.0280 to 1.0480. Last week, it settled slightly below the 1.035 level. Note that the European banks will make an early prepayment of almost 300 billion euros on the TLTROs, which is around half of what the market had been anticipating, and this saw some upward pressure on short-term rates. Sterling also remains within its range set on Tuesday at around 1.174 to 1.203. It struggled since to rise above 1.195. Sterling found support yesterday, though, near 1.765 and has not spent much time below 1.1860 today. In corporate news, Renault stocks fell 0.7% after ratings agency Moody's changed the outlook on the French carmaker to stable from negative to reflect prospects of improved profitability from its strategic plan. Tesco stocks rose 1.2% after Britain's biggest retailer announced it was offering its staff advances on their pay to help them navigate a worsening cost of living crisis. But in Asia, stock markets kept to a tight range on Friday and were set for a muted week as hawkish signals from the Federal Reserve and worsening COVID-19 infections in China kept most investors from making large bets. Hong Kong stocks were among the worst performers of the day, with the Hang Seng Index down 0.79%. While the index saw volatile trade this week, it was still set to end the week about 4% higher, and some optimism over the scaling back of COVID-19 restrictions in the city. Chinese stocks also fell on Friday and were set to end the week slightly positive amid some optimism over the relaxation of the zero COVID policy. China's Shanghai Composite fell 0.58% and added less than 0.5% this week. Sentiment towards China was dented as the country lodged its largest daily jump in COVID cases in 7 months. Rising infections brewed concerns over renewed lockdown measures in the country, which have severely crimped economic growth this year. Weak economic readings from China released this week also show that the country was struggling to navigate new lockdown measures, denting sentiment. Before the mainland markets open on Monday, the banks will set the loan prime rates. And the PBOC's recent warning that price pressures will rise with the economic recovery seems to lean against any lingering hope of a decline in rates. After gaining a little more than 1.5% against the Chinese yuan over the past two sessions, the dollar pulled back today to almost $7.11. Still, the greenback is holding on to a small gain for the week of about 0.2%. The PBOC set the dollar's reference rate at 7.1091, and there were reports that state banks sold dollars on Friday. Japan's Nikkei 225 index fell 0.1% on Friday as consumer inflation in the country surged to a 40-year high in October. The reading, coupled with weakening economic growth, fed speculation that the Bank of Japan may eventually tighten its accommodative monetary policy. Japan's October consumer inflation rose more than expected, but it will not lead to a change in monetary stance, as the Bank of Japan Governor Kuroda insists that price pressures will recede next year. Headline CPI rose to 3.7% from 3% from a year ago, while the core measure, which excludes fresh food, rose to 3.6% from 3%. Still, price pressures are broadening. Excluding both fresh food and energy, prices rose 2.5% from a year ago, accelerating 1.8%, and on the month, the headline rate rose by 0.6%, as much as it did in the previous 2 months, while the core measure, both including and excluding energy, rose by 0.5%. Goods prices rose by 0.9% in October, but services prices rose by 0.3%. Goods and services prices were unchanged in August and September. The Bank of Japan expects core inflation to fall to 1.6% in the next two fiscal years. The median forecast core CPI at 1.8% next year and 0.6% in 2024. Now, the dollar straddled the 140 JPY level, and it's at the narrowest range this month of less than 1 yen ahead of the North American session on Friday. And as the US, Europe and Japan seeks to strengthen their own semiconductor fabrication capacity, it risks reducing the economic significance of Taiwan. In response, the Taiwanese government is proposing to expand tax breaks for corporate R&D and production of chips, Reaching a certain threshold of R&D could reduce the income tax by a quarter, and reaching a set level of advanced equipment purchases could now take another 5% from the tax bill. Estimates suggest that Taiwan manufactures more than 90% of the world's most advanced chips for military and for business. Now in Australia, the S&P ASX 200 inched cautiously higher on Friday as the US Federal Reserve officials revved up fears of a global recession after reminding financial markets that interest rates would have to go a lot higher to tame inflation. The ASX 200 edged up 0.2% or 16 points to 7,151 and lost 0.1% on the week. It had climbed, by the way, to a five-month high on Monday. Communications and industrial sectors led the meagre gains. Copper miner OZ Minerals was the top performer, up 4% to 27.34 after its board agreed to a sweetened takeover bid from BHP Group at 28.25 per share. BHP will now undertake 4 weeks of exclusive due diligence inside OZ with the blessing of the OZ board as it seeks to finalise a deal to give it increased exposure to copper. The industrial metal is in huge demand as the world transitions to electric vehicles and more renewable energy. Healthcare business Nanosonics gained 1.3% to $4.58 on stronger sales for the financial year, which ended in October. Health insurer NIB Holdings rallied 3.2% to $7.12 after stronger revenue from insurance premiums in the first 4 months of the financial year and a 16.3% jump in profits. The major banks and mining giants advanced with ANZ up 0.78% to 24.50, CBA up 0.17% to 105.82, NAB up 0.2% to $30.66, and Westpac up 1.81% to $23.62. Macquarie, though, slid 0.28% to 179.32. Budget jewellery merchant Lovisa was the biggest laggard, down 7.1% to 23.85 after its trading update missed analyst expectations. And luxury platform Satire shares tanked 12.2% to $1.47.5 after founder Dean Mintz sold another large chunk of stock for greater diversification. Software group Nuix shot up 21.8% to 69.5 cents after posting an annualized contract value gain of 4.6% to $169.5 million since the end of June. And construction giant Lendlease's stock fell 1.6% to $7.80 after warning of deteriorating environment and challenging economic conditions. The company did not provide updated financial guidance. And finally, as the crypto winter deepens, we saw stories of people with frozen assets in FTX's Australian entity and speculation that Bitcoin could fall towards $12,000 US in the days ahead. I fear that losses will mount in this unregulated sector. Bitcoin was last at 16,634, while Ether was at 1,206, and I'll probably make a separate show going into more detail with regard to the latest disruptions in the crypto market. But you can see standing back that really the markets are still not taking fully on board what the Fed is saying, and the risks of recession and a slowdown and pressure on earnings mean that the markets are still way, way overvalued. Therefore, whilst there might be a much wringing of hands at the moment, the truth is markets are likely to go significantly lower in the weeks and months ahead. And I don't think that anything we've heard this week is positive to the future trajectory of markets. It all looks to me to be grinding lower. I'm Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Many thanks for watching, and I'll see you again next time.